Hello, everyone, and welcome to Energy Unplugged. This is your host, Stuart Weedye, and I've got along with me today Mark Denton, otherwise known as the Sage of South Georgia, a Wiley Energy veteran for four decades, but he started at a very young age. And we're really excited to have Jeff Stewart of Blue Star Gas with us in the Pacific Northwest, in Arizona and Utah. But Mark, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to have Jeff with us.
Well, we are. Jeff has got a unique perspective for folks in the propane industry, or as I like to call it, the LP gas industry. And we're going to talk about a lot of things, including renewable LPG, which is sourced from organic materials. And Jeff, welcome to Energy Unplugged. How are you today as well?
Wonderful. Thank you. It's nice to be able to join you.
Well, good. Could you tell us a little bit before we get started about Blue Star Gas and the history of your company?
Certainly. Blue Star Gas was started in 1938. My family bought the business in the mid-40s, and I am third generation in the business, celebrating over 80 years at this point. We operate in Northern California, Oregon, Washington, Utah, and Arizona. We have considerable residential customers, as well as commercial, industrial, and significant focus on fleet business of auto gas.
Well, very good. We're all familiar, or many people are familiar, let me rephrase that, with a lot of the standards that are being propagated in the state of California. So could you give us a little perspective on some of the things that are being done in California, even from the perspective of, you know, the electrification of everything?
Certainly. It is a certainly an interesting time in California. Under the electrification of everything, we really have two regulatory areas, the low carbon fuel standard, as well as the, which is run by the California Energy Commission, as well as the Zero Net Energy Initiative, which is focused on buildings. Certainly the focus is on electrification, which and having that be the frankly a panacea of decarbonization. Very significant limitations in resiliency and reliability, and we have worked hard to increase the awareness amongst regulators in particular of the role that propane is capable of playing in assisting, frankly, the goals of decarbonization and also increasing resiliency to the to consumers and commercial businesses in the state. Ed Stewart.
Yeah, one of the interesting things, the brownouts, California has made significant investments in wind and solar. And we've talked about in previous podcasts fact that there's no such thing as a free lunch. Wind and solar at their end use appear to have zero emissions. But when you take into consideration the massive amounts of mining that's required to build wind turbines and to produce the solar panels themselves, not to mention just the fact that there's an intermittent component to wind and solar. When the sun doesn't shine and the wind doesn't blow, there are issues and you still need backup power. So I guess I'm curious, what is the view of the California Energy Commission and others in California as it relates to those type of situations, and particularly when you have the rolling blackouts as you described? Do they view there's a role for backup sources to keep the system running even when the wind is and solar are not meeting the demand?
In short, not that I have seen thus far. There seems to be a feeling that the wonders of technology will rescue us. And that is not materializing. I think the next year is going to be a very telling period in the dawning of, frankly, reality. The Public Utilities Commission has granted permission for a number of the state utilities to bring in large installations and farms, really, of diesel generators in order to provide backup power and to limit the impact of the power shutoffs. So I think with that fact alone, it is it's very telling that and that has been, frankly, very quiet. But it's very telling of the limitations of wind and solar. We have a limited ability in the design of the grid to be able to handle increased load. And really what we are in right now, which really is not being discussed to the degree I feel that it should, is a transition to what should be a transition to distributed power generation. The generation of power at the source, at a home or a business, that is capable of providing the resiliency in combination with the wind and solar, if propane is a part of that solution. And really, the grid is going to have to really be reversed in the coming years in order to achieve the reliability and resiliency that the state of California deserves, and to keep it from being, well, a power grid that's behaving like a third world country.
Well, Jeff, it's incredibly ironic that you have diesel generation systems backing up the regime in the system in California, because I think correctly, wood, diesel, and coal are energy sources that we probably need to move away from if we expect to make any progress. So it is a rather ironic that we've got these diesel generators providing the reliability to the grid system. I don't even know what to say about that. It is very quiet and very, very little understood that that's a fact going on out there right now.
It is. And really what, from a LP gas perspective, that we can provide in the context of distributed generation is that reliability. You know, we, with combined cooling heat and power units, we are able to generate electricity, provide hot water, some space heat, have batteries for backup, and work hand in hand with solar installations. And when solar is not able to take care of the load of a home or a business, propane can step in and run that power back into the grid. And you know, that really is a good complement of LP gas with with solar. And we have, as a society, we have many tools that are available to us that need to be brought to bear in order to achieve the goals of reduced carbon output. You really have to look to your point earlier. Go ahead.
And not just carbon, but other emissions, harmful particulate matter and black carbon and nitrogen oxide and sulfides, et cetera. There are multiple paths that we need to work on. And what's interesting to me is those folks, I think with good intentions, promote the electrification of everything, are really simultaneously demonizing the power companies such as Pacific Gas and Electric out west, or Duke Energy here in North Carolina, where I live. And so they want to electrify everything, but they're creating a model that is very inefficient in terms of the energy that goes into a power plant. By the time you generate the power and send it along transmission lines, only 32% of it at best gets to the plug. So you're already losing 68% of the energy, whereas if you used it on site or as distributed generation, as you just described, they're interchangeable terms, on site power and distributed generation. It's a model that's different than the one we've been using for over 100 years in this country. And I think there's a lot of people in the propane industry that really strongly advocate for on site solar coupled with these prime power generator systems, or the micro combined heating and power, micro CHP, as they're commonly referred to. So that's something that you think is a good path forward to make California more resilient, more reliable in terms of the delivery of power to provide comfort to homes and businesses. Is that something that you see any momentum, those hybrid type systems that you're describing?
I feel very strongly that it is the future of power generation in this country, and starting in California. You've made mention now of a couple of points when talking about the drawbacks of wind and solar at the upfront creation of those products for mining and materials and energy that goes into that. There's also the disposal at the end of life of those products. We have immense issues with the disposal of the blades for wind turbines in landfills. And we really have to, as a society, look at how, what the cradle to grave approach is on emissions and energy and efficiency. When that is done, LP gas and the technology that has been discussed of on-site power coupled with solar really ends up in the sweet spot of the best return on investment, but also return on investment in an environmental manner or measure.
Well, Jeff, I see this as a practical, too. If I'm one of your customers out there, or an AA customer out there that has a combined heat and power and cooling system, and I have a blackout because of wildfires or whatever, my life is pretty normal. Whereas if I'm completely dependent on that grid, I'm in trouble.
You're absolutely correct, Mark. And, and it's really not even a wildfire. It is merely the threat of a wildfire. And that's really the issue that is going on. And, that started in California in 2017. We the wildfire, the fire season has expanded. We had the longest season ever in the history of the state.
Where we are with the hurricanes, and we had a very active hurricane season, but there are a lot of steps and do's and don'ts to try to protect your customers and make sure the people in that you're serving are taken care of. So what are some of the things that you all have as practices at Blue Star Gas for your customers when you're having to deal with those California wildfires?
So I think having the first step, frankly, to any good plan, right, is communication. And so we do make significant efforts to communicate with our customers through direct communication, as well as public service announcements, to educate people on what to do in the event that they need to evacuate. Preparation that people are undertaking is to ensure that they have the resiliency and they're turning to prior to the natural disaster, and the level of preparation that people are undertaking is a year-round effort. It involves certainly vegetation clearing and those kinds of things, but also a prioritization we have seen of backup power. We are a Kohler dealer, have been for decades, and we are supporting many of our customers with backup power generation in preparation for wildfires. And that's really where LP Gas shines. We have had situations where obviously not only the electricity has been shut off as a precautionary measure, but also natural gas even has been shut off for up to a week in certain areas. So with the significant widespread events in California, as well as I mentioned earlier of Oregon and Washington, we're seeing a tremendous number of people making decisions that they never would have considered making in the past. So there's a great deal of effort put into communication and supporting the needs of our customers in the preparation for wildfires.
Well, again, and Jeff, I think it's another one of those ironies that people need to be comfortable and secure and have power in today's human society. And we are in a good position as the LP gas industry, and also people maybe in natural gas areas, but I think even more so the propane industry, to provide either to emergency responders, to the firefighters that are out there, a good place to take a warm shower, to cook, and to meet all these essential needs. And one of the things that's interesting to me is out there in California, they're going against many, I think, societal norms. And I say that in the sense that societies have been moving for centuries away from less energy dense and call them biofuels like wood or solid waste, like they still use in many developed countries, to more energy dense fuels. And I would say natural gas and propane and certainly nuclear and some of the petroleum based products are energy dense fuels. So for people to have this security in an environment where these interruptions and these wildfires are taking place, both because of the grid is strained, but also the frequency and the massive impact of the wildfires, they're taking the steps to provide for themselves and be comfortable regardless of the situation with the electrification of everything. So it's a good option for folks out there, isn't it?
It is. backup power. We actually are installing generators in for some customers that have invested in, say, the Tesla power walls, so that they can recharge their power walls with propane.
You know, that brings up an interesting thing. Those advocates, and again, I'm a great believer of on-site solar in particular, and I think we should have more on-site power generation, but one of the most famous and the largest lithium battery storage center is in California, but it can only store enough power for around 24,000 homes for 4 to 6 hours. And, you know, there are 134 million and over, 30 million homes in California. So it only covers a fraction of the time. We're talking about hours and not days. And it's a massive battery storage center that you have out in Escondido, California. Is that the correct location?
With today's technology, and certainly everything is evolving. But certainly with today's technology, the battery technology is not at a point where it is a good match for the duration of events that we are experiencing, and the capital cost to install even what you described is astonishing. It's really
fun. So, Jeff, for example, if I had a wildfire and I had a battery electric vehicle, unless it was fully charged, I couldn't even evacuate with it.
That is correct. We are installing LP gas backup generators specifically so that people can perform that precise function, Mark.
Well, and speaking of transportation, Jeff, Blue Star Gas, who's also a member of Alliance Autogas, has been one of the foremost leaders in the country in converting particularly commercial vehicles to run on propane autogas. And you have undertaken extraordinary efforts. And one of the interesting things is globally, there are over 28 million vehicles running on propane autogas, as we've talked about in the past, but very few, less than 200,000 here in the United States. What do you think is slowing the adoption, or what are you seeing, even though you are having greater results than many in the propane industry getting vehicles to run on autogas? What are some of the obstacles that you see out there in terms of making it a more viable market and it growing at a much higher rate than it has been the last 8 or 10 years?
We have not told our story well. The people are typically willing to only make safe decisions, and something that is not mainstream or considered mainstream, that lacks awareness of benefits, is it's really the psychology of consumers, or in the case of Blue Star's efforts and Lossman and Alliance Autogas, the mindset of fleet manager. And the benefits are and have been proven to be tremendous, not only in the very significant reduction in carbon, but also, equally importantly, particulate matter and NOx, which are very significant criteria pollutants that the propane autogas is capable of achieving and delivering very significant reductions. So the economics are even more astounding. We are $1 to $1.60 sometimes less than the price of gasoline. We have fleets that have adopted in a widespread manner. Now, fleets of as little as 25 vehicles that over the last 5 years, we have saved that fleet over $1 million in operating cost. So it really, to answer your question, is awareness of the what propane auto gas can achieve is why I think it's not more widespread.
You know, that's a very interesting point. Not only the awareness, but the other thing that you mentioned is people wanting to do the safe thing or what is perceived to be the safe thing. And autogas doesn't have that awareness to create that perception. I think what I'm hearing you say, but for some reason, the electric vehicle has the safeness. It's in every magazine, Bloomberg News, the Wall Street Journal. All the things are talking about the electrification of the future being the safe and the right thing to do from an environmental standpoint. But it's interesting, the range limitations, the operating profile limitations, it's actually less safe, but people and companies perceive that it's a safer thing because it's good PR, good public relations for them, and said, we care about the environment. That's a really good point. And until we get the awareness of propane auto gas up, it's going to be a greater challenge for us to really make the penetration in the marketplace that I think we all think can make a not only produce the cost saving benefits, but also the environmental benefits that we all know that we're trying to strive for. It's one of the great things that if we talk about cleaning up the air, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, taking black carbon and particulate matter that are produced by diesel vehicles out of the system, whether you believe that the climate change issue is an existential threat or whether you don't, we all can and should be able to agree on a cleaner air. So that's part of our message, isn't it, to get that benefit out of it while we work towards having a more perfect solution, whatever that may be in the future. It's unknown at this time, though.
You're absolutely correct, Stuart. And I'm going to take this opportunity to interject the benefits of renewable propane into the discussion, because when a fleet runs on renewable propane, not to get too technical, but the measure referred to as carbon intensity of renewable propane is actually lower than that of electricity from the grid, even in California with all of the renewables. We have a very powerful resource in renewable propane to dramatically change the conversation and increase awareness. We can actually have fleets that are running based on a full fuel cycle emission analysis that is cleaner.
So, Jeff, do you think that the internal combustion engine is dead?
Absolutely not. There is a very important role for commerce and individual personal transportation of the internal combustion engine that it will continue for a very long time. I would go so far, certainly, as to say forever, because just like in the area of electricity, the technology evolution of biofuels, as well as efficiency technology within engines, we are today able to have a zero emission vehicle when burning, utilizing an internal combustion engine, when utilizing a combination of renewable propane and blending a modest amount of DME, dimethyl ether, we can achieve on a full fuel cycle analysis methodology of carbon intensity, we can hit zero emission. That technology will continue to evolve, and the volumes of those fuels will, through market demand, grow. So I think we're well positioned to have a long-term internal combustion engine where the benefits of range and payload and ultimately fueling infrastructure, even with alternative fuels, will be able to be sustained.
And Jeff, going back to the carbon intensity, that's not something that was determined through a Google search or anywhere. I mean, this is from legitimate government laboratories, the Department of Energy, funded laboratories with independent data and research. And let's just use the word science, since that's quite a favorite term with people right now. And we should follow legitimate real science. That's from actual data that the state of California produced through doing studies with, I believe, Argonne National Laboratories in their GREET model. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct, Stuart. Every thing that I have stated previously is directly out of the California GREET model, which is based on Argonne National Laboratories analysis.
Right. And so it is rigorous and quite extensive how they do those calculations. But let's go back to renewable propane a little bit. There is a limited supply, but there is some. It's proven that it can work. And it is a direct drop-in fuel. In other words, the molecular structure of renewable propane is identical to fossil propane. What are some of the methods or the sources of the renewable propane, and how is it being made?
The most common and highest volume at this point is coming from a renewable diesel generation process where renewable feedstocks are being utilized. Renewable feedstocks at this point primarily is beef tallow that is being processed to create renewable diesel and renewable propane. There are other technologies that are utilizing various other renewable feedstocks. It can be
plant oils.
Plant matter.
Plant oils are quite common. Yes.
Plant matter, almond and pistachio hulls, all of which can be utilized. It is going to increase in volume as the realization dawns on producers that there is a market, a growing market for renewable propane, so that they can put that into the marketplace rather than consume it within their processes to generate power for their facility. But it is it has all of the hallmarks of a scalable product that can be deployed to move the needle in a very significant environmental manner.
Well, and I think it's a safe bet to say the renewable liquid fuels combined with improvements in the internal combustion engine have the ability to produce astonishing improvements in emissions of, in the transportation sector. And it's not just something that we're talking about today, but for the decades to come, both of those things, those improvements in the internal combustion engine and the use of renewable liquid fuels, whether wholly renewable fuels or blended in with fossil, it certainly is an improvement over traditional fuels of diesel and gasoline that we currently use here in the United States. And those are the steps, if we're sincere, if we really are intent and intentional about improving the air quality for a variety of reasons, for the benefit of the environment, for the climate, and for humans themselves. Those two factors together give us a bright future for LP gas and auto gas in the transportation sector going forward. So, Jeff, I greatly appreciate you taking time from your busy schedule, and hope that we can visit again in the near future. But this has hopefully been informative to people. Here at Energy Unplugged, we're just really trying to inform people about the realities of power density, energy density, options that are available, the multiple paths that we must follow in our country to make the improvements we desire for our environment. And you've been a very helpful and, as always, informed guest. So, Jeff, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to join you, Stuart.
Jeff, we got to sit on here for a few minutes until it's done.